Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. So this morning, I'd like to reflect a little bit on supports for continuity of practice. And in the sitting, I suggested a few things that can support mindfulness. One is just, you know, the thing I think we mostly think of as supporting continuity is effort, you know, just that reminding ourselves, that kind of gentle persistence. And that's just one way, but it's an important way to support the momentum of mindfulness, to support the continuity. And so just reminding yourself to be aware, and that's kind of the counterpoint to noting in this practice in a way. It's like, yep, aware, that is that recognition, aware, aware. And I like that, to use that as a reminder, because it helps the mind, or the question, am I aware, or just aware? Aware, because it helps the mind be interested in what awareness is, even if we're not clear about it. It just begins to spark that interest, that curiosity about what is awareness anyway, even if we are not clear about it. It's okay, but sometimes people ask, well, why bother with that question? You know, if I know I'm aware already, why bother with the question? It just keeps kind of the mind having that kind of interest in this experience, what it means to be aware, what it means to be aware, as opposed to what it is to know what we are aware of. You know, there's both parts are happening. There's the awareness and what we're aware of. And so we can kind of be aware or know or feel both sides of that process. So we're just kind of checking in, aware. And so this is one important way, you know, aware of what, just that gentle reminder. But as we do start to get more momentum, the frequency of reminding probably needs to go down. We need to back off on that level of conscious effort, because we are aware. And it's kind of like in that scooter analogy that I used, you know, if you're riding the scooter, if there's momentum on the scooter already, putting your foot down is going to actually slow you down, or it's going to kind of get in the way. So when there's a little bit of a momentum, then a simple kind of reminding or recognition, already aware, it's like a less effortful way to notice the awareness. It's somehow like a slightly lighter tap of the scooter. You know, already aware. Don't need to do this. Don't need to remind myself to be aware. There's the recognition, already aware. And then there's the, as we get familiar with the experience of being aware, and this can take time. For me, it was not obvious at first, although it is, as I think I said the first day, you know, once we begin to recognize it, what it is to be aware, it's obvious in some ways, because it's so pervasive. It's happening so much of the time. It's just not something we've tended to have a sense of curiosity about or interest about. But as we get familiar with that experience, it's like we can just connect with that, ride that wave, feel into that sense of being aware, and just stay. It's like staying connected with it. It is very much like, you know, maybe surfing, where you're just on that wave and just riding it. You don't have to do anything. The momentum of the wave carries you. And so the momentum of being aware can carry the mindfulness and support its continuing. So getting familiar with that feeling also is a support, and it's very light in terms of the effort as we get familiar with that feeling. So those things can be used in daily life also. Some of those reminders in particular times of the day can be used to support the momentum of mindfulness. There's some other aspects of supporting the momentum of mindfulness that can be helpful in daily life. I think intention is one big one. Connecting with the, you know, that our intention is to be aware and to be curious about what's happening. And just reminding ourselves of that regularly. So this retreat is essentially functioning in a way as that intention. You know, you are intending to come to these sessions, intending to take in the teachings. And so the retreat itself is functioning to support the intention. It's an easy way to support the intention in a way, but that's what it's doing. It's supporting the intention towards mindfulness. The fact that we're coming back helps us to remember through the day. But it's the intention that also helps us remember through the day. And so, you know, that's something that you can do in your daily lives, is just reminding yourself of the importance, the value of the practice, that this is an important piece to connect to, that I plan, or my hope is, my intention is to connect with mindfulness throughout the day, and consciously reminding yourself of that at times through the day. And I would say that the moment that mindfulness returns is a good time to do that, because there's the possibility of remembering in that moment. If we have you know, if we're kind of interested in noticing the return of mindfulness, then as that returns, you know, not to necessarily try to hold on to it, but to just remember, this is useful. This is something to cultivate, so that it kind of cements or kind of reconnects us with that intention to be present. Curiosity is another support for the practice, for the momentum of mindfulness. When we're curious about our experience, when there's a curiosity arising, it's like curiosity brings the effort with it. So we don't have to try to just keep reminding ourselves when there's a sense of, oh, what's this? What's happening here? There's a very natural movement to explore it, to be with it. And so curiosity, and the use of questions that Sayadaw encourages, he says that that's a spark for curiosity. That's a spark for interest. That when we drop a question into the mind, again, not to try to answer the question ourselves, but just drop a question into the mind, like, well, what is happening here? What is this attitude? You know, how am I in relationship to this experience? When we drop a question in, then it begins to enliven the curious part of the mind. So it's not something that we need to do so much to try to be curious. But, you know, just using those questions can begin to spark some curiosity. Some of us have more investigative minds than others. So for some of you, it's probably quite easy and natural to be curious. For others of you, sometimes the investigation part of the mind has been dampened by conditions. I think as babies, we are all incredibly curious. You know, you look at a baby, they are just curious about everything. So it's a very natural part of our system to be curious, to learn, to want to learn and understand and take in and understand how things relate and connect. It's a natural part of being human. And yet sometimes our conditioning has kind of squashed that, you know, it's dangerous to be curious or something. So for some of us, there may need to be a little bit of a support for that curiosity. So some of these questions, it's useful for these questions to be connected with wisdom, with the Dharma, you know, just like what is happening? What is the relationship? How is this affecting the body? How is it affecting the mind? What is the experience that's been conditioned by these thoughts? You know, those kinds of questions are in the terrain of curiosity about experience as impermanent, as unreliable phenomenon, as just part of causes and conditions flowing on. So there's one particular area of curiosity that can be very fun, I think. And for me, it's kind of almost the flip side of trying to cultivate the momentum or the continuity of mindfulness, but it's a real support for cultivating the continuity of mindfulness. And that is to be curious about where you lose mindfulness. And this is a great thing to do in daily life. You know, on retreat, I encourage this a lot in the in-between times when you're kind of just going through your day. Where do you tend to lose mindfulness? So at home, there's probably going to be big gaps, you know, big chunks of time. But just beginning to be curious about where it is that you really get lost. What are the situations? What are the mind states in which you really get lost? You know, it might be that you get lost in activities, things that you're doing. Maybe you tend to get really lost when you're, one of the big ones is having a conversation, right? I mean, that's an easy one to notice. Wow, I just get lost there. Or maybe you tend to get lost when you're talking to somebody, you know, in one of those marketing calls on the phone, or maybe you get really lost when you go to the grocery store and you have to be navigating all of the different people and things that you have to remember. So just be curious about, kind of like take some time, maybe once or twice a day, and look back at the previous few hours and reflect, well, where was there mindfulness and where did mindfulness get lost? As you begin to notice those places of the day, or it can be certain mind states that we tend to get just hooked into. Anger and rage are a big one that we can just get hooked into those mind states. So just if you notice a place or a situation or a mind state in which you tend to get lost, well, places are, situations maybe are a little bit easier in a way to navigate, in that you probably will know, maybe you'll know that you're kind of, there'll be a little bit more awareness as you're heading into something. So you notice you get lost when you have a conversation. So what I like to encourage there is a little bit of curiosity, not so much about, I mean, not just the brute rote force of trying to stay mindful while that happens, but curiosity about what happens to catch the mind. Where does the mind get hooked in that situation? So if there's a little bit of mindfulness going into it, you know, there's the possibility that you may begin to see the first moments of that, the mind kind of going out of mindfulness or getting hooked to something. some moment or momentum of a mood or of an idea, an excitement or excitement's a big one. You know, excitement's a big one that we can get hooked on. So you may begin to notice what it is that is catching the mind, that is taking us away from mindfulness. As we can start to notice that, where it is that we get lost, then we can have some curiosity about what happens there. So an example, example for myself, this was on a retreat. So there's a slightly different flavor perhaps on retreat, but what I noticed, I was getting lost. I would find myself when I was in the restroom and I was washing my hands, you know, I would just find myself gazing at myself in the mirror, and I would have no recollection of thinking of, you know, doing that. But I would notice that I was gazing at myself in the mirror. So there was a little bit of a wake up there. But I didn't know how that happened. And so I started getting curious about that. It's like, okay, I'm pretty mindful. I'm heading to the restroom, and let's see if I can notice what happens there. And over again, I wouldn't notice. I would find myself looking in the mirror again. It's like, wow, I didn't notice again, you know? And so not beating myself up about it, but more just like, wow, this is such a strong thing. I mean, what is going on here? So it increased my curiosity to see how hard it was to notice it. So I hope that can be a support for you. You know, it's like, these things are not easy. They're very subtle in the mind, the way they operate. So, you know, so I just kept trying. So that was the intention. That was using intention. It's like, wow, I didn't notice it again. I'll try next time. Okay. You know, so I had, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a day I could try to play with this. And at some point, while I was washing my hands, I recognized that I wasn't looking in the mirror, but I felt the intention to look up. And it wasn't like some deep, you know, need to be seen, or, you know, there was nothing really, you know, deeper. It was just a habit. Just like, oh, this is what I do. But, you know, habits can be really deeply embedded in there. But, you know, so it was just very interesting to see, oh, I could see that intention. I didn't have to follow it at that point, but I could follow it. It wasn't like there was anything that needed to be, you know, unpacked or anything there. But it was just a habit. So, but that just showed me how strong habits can be and how hard they can be to see. So, you know, just like being curious about that, and it can be really challenging to see these places where mindfulness gets lost, but just keep being curious, you know, a place where mindfulness gets hooked. I talked about another way to explore this is perhaps around mind states. You might notice that you tend to get hooked in particularly reactive habits and patterns of mind. And so I mentioned that early on I noticed this around anger, you know, that this was my very first mindfulness practice to kind of be curious about that. And I set the intention, so this is again using intention, to be aware whenever that happened. Whenever I noticed that I was angry, I set the intention to be aware. And with strong reactive patterns of mind, ones that we really get hooked into, probably at some point in the being hooked, you may recognize, oh, I'm hooked again. And so those, we may not see the going in, you know, we may not see how it's being constructed, but we know that we've woken up into it. And so in that moment, with that intention, just notice whatever you can notice there. So the strong pattern is there. What's here? Probably unpleasantness, probably a lot of thoughts, probably a big mess of stuff. And so in daily life, when I explored this, it was, you know, just like kind of taking that in. And then what I found was possible, which was a gift, actually, was that in that moment before, the moment before, when I'd been just so stuck to that rage, that mind state of rage, it had not been possible to do anything. I was frozen in front of my computer. You know, I was just frozen. I was not doing anything but thinking about the rage. And so that moment of recognizing, oh, this is rage. This is, wow, it feels awful. This hurts. This is painful. And, you know, at that point, pretty new to meditation, it was kind of like, well, I don't know what I do with this. I guess I go back to work. And so, but that in retrospect, actually looking back at this whole process, in retrospect, that was a huge gift, because in the moments before, I couldn't go back to work. I had no choice in the matter. The rage was in charge. As soon as the mind became aware of it, knew what was happening, recognized the experience, there was some capacity to set it aside. I didn't even feel like I had to repress it. I just felt like, yeah, okay, that's there. And yeah, I guess I just go back to work. I don't know what else to do here. I go back to work. And that actually ended up being a very useful part of the process for supporting the whole unwinding of that rage. So, you know, just having that commitment to notice when I woke up in it, and noticing what was there, and then just getting on with my day, not with a repression, but just kind of like at that point, the mind can shift. Perhaps the mind can shift attention a little bit from that really sticky mind state and engage with something else. And then, you know, just kept going with that. And as I described the other day, as this happened over the course of a couple of months, I was noticing that I was no longer getting so caught. I was waking up into what felt more like normal anger, and then, you know, more just like real annoyance. And so it's like the mindfulness was breaking into the process of anger earlier and earlier in the process. And then, as I described the other day, at some point there was actually seeing the construction, how it actually began with a thought and the intention to jump on that thought and think more thoughts, to get angry. So the practice, this took place over a couple of months, this exploration around this very challenging pattern. And it really created so much more space and ease around it. And this was with the intention, with the noticing the curiosity about where do I really get caught? And can I bring mindfulness there? Can there be some curiosity and interest to explore that? So that can be, you know, just picking a thing that you know the mind tends to get hooked in, some kind of pattern of mind or you know, some place in your day where it tends to get hooked, and being curious about what's happening there. So I'll continue this a little bit after the break, a little bit more about continuity, especially in daily life, because I think this is what we're talking about. And we're not probably going to get the kind of momentum we get on retreat in daily life, but there's some very important kinds of momentum that can happen for us in daily life. So let's take a 10-minute break and yeah, remember to turn your cameras off. So there was a question about working with rage. And since I was just talking about my own experience with that, I'm going to follow on with a little bit more related to that, to the question. So a little of the question. I'm aware I'm enraged, hurt, ashamed, and grief-stricken, but mostly aware of the rage, and it is not a relaxed awareness. I'm aware of the mind generating aversive thoughts upon which I keep ruminating. There's an energy that I perceive as vengeful, and I'm trying to pull it back. My intention is to rest in wisdom in response to this experience, but the rageful energy feels enormous, and the aversion extends to the energy itself. Should I make more room for the rage? If so, how? So, what I would say is again, the question of, is it possible to have an awareness that can meet the experience? As I described in my experience from just a moment ago, the sense of recognizing the rage and really feeling it. So this is an important piece, to let yourself feel the energy. It sounds like there is a sense of, in this question, the person in this question, there is a sense of the energy. So seeing if you can connect with that energy and not connect to the thoughts so much. I would consciously, when you notice the mind going to the thoughts, come back to the energy. And the energy is big and it's powerful. You could explore the possibility, and this may sound scary, but exploring the possibility of letting the energy get as big as it wants to. There's sometimes a way that we're trying to contain energy in the idea of this body. And you know, it's like, this is where it is, so this is where it is, and it's got to be held in. Well, if you're alone in a situation, then seeing if you can just let go of the idea of the body is holding the emotion, and let your room hold the experience. Let it get as big as it wants to. And see what happens. You know, sometimes it's almost like I've had this image when I've explored this. And the first time I heard this instruction, I thought, whoa, there's no way I should do that. That sounds really scary to let it get as big as it wants to. But what seems to happen is kind of like a physics thing, I think, is if you've got a bunch of particles that have movement in them in a small box, they're moving really quickly. And there's a lot of energy in that small container when those particles are in a small container. But you give those particles a bigger container and there's a lot more space. There's a lot, the energy has more room. And so there's a kind of a way that our minds compress the energy and makes it feel more intense. And so the idea of letting the energy get as big as it wants to can actually give it more space, more room, and not to get stronger, but to be felt. So allowing that sense of letting it get big and just seeing if you can be with the feeling of the energy itself, and not every time you notice your mind get pulled to the thoughts, just see if you can land with the energy, the feeling of the experience, rather than the thoughts about it. So just keep coming back to that. And you may only have a capacity to do this for a few moments, a few seconds, a minute maybe. And then one thing that I've learned is really skillful is to kind of at certain point acknowledge it. And it's like at one point with my anger, when I was working with this in daily life, you know, I would see the anger come up in daily life. I would see it happen. And I would see at times that my mind was not really able to be present with it. That as soon as I tried to be mindful of it, I would get lost in it. And so so sometimes I recognize this is not so helpful to try to be mindful of this. So if you notice, for instance, in trying to be with the feeling, that all you do is getting caught back into the thoughts, that you can't really be with the feeling of that energy, then it can be useful to kind of acknowledge the energy in a way that's like, yep, I see you. I bow to your strength. I bow to what's here. And my mind isn't strong enough to meet this right now. So I'm going to put my attention on something else. And so for myself, I just, you know, put my attention on my feet when I was taking a walk. You know, often this anger came up while I was walking. And so I just put my attention on something physical, simple, basic, to let the attention kind of, not to repress the feeling, but to redirect. So that can be a useful tool in daily life, to redirect the attention to something if you find that you can't not get caught in the thoughts. So those are just a few additional pieces. There's one thing. My intention is to rest in wisdom in response to this experience. Resting may not be the feeling of what's going on. You know, it may feel very, I mean, just very strong and very intense. So don't create the idea that it has to feel like resting. Just can you be with the energy? It may feel, explosive and huge. And so just seeing if you can just be with that energy a little bit. And then in terms of continuity, one piece that I'll mention that's been important for me in daily life to recognize. When teachers talked about continuity, I kind of felt like this meant all day long, or at least, hours of continuity. They kept emphasizing, okay, you really need to practice continuity all day long, every moment of the day, and the continuity is where the power of mindfulness happens. And I thought that, okay, in order to have wisdom, I really need to work really hard so that the mindfulness can be continuous, so that wisdom can happen. And what I've experienced in my own practice is that there does need to be a continuity for wisdom to arise. But that continuity can be the matter of seconds of continuity. We can get little bursts of really strong mindfulness right in the midst of our day. If we're having this intention, this kind of curiosity of, can I be with these things? Can I notice what's happening? So for myself, one of the first times this little burst of continuity happened that was very clear was that time early in my practice when I talked about the other day, the noticing I was cutting an apple in my kitchen, and I noticed the thought of the person that I was angry with arise in my mind, and then noticed how the mind wanted to jump on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry, and then noticed that intention was heading towards suffering, and then noticed that the mind let it go. So that description takes, about 10 seconds, 15 seconds, but that experience happened in the space of about half a second. So there was a lot of continuity that arose in that moment. Just it was a little burst of continuity that happened. I wasn't particularly like working at being mindful in the kitchen that day. I had just been practicing with this intention to be aware of anger when it arose. And that intention bore fruit in a way, in a moment, just with that little burst of continuity as that thought arose and the mind was headed towards anger. Able to see very clearly, very deeply into that pattern, how it was constructed, that there was a choice in that moment. And the mind was free from the suffering. If the mindfulness had not arisen there, I would have been lost in anger again. I would have been caught in anger again. And so there was a huge appreciation for the value of practice there. There was an understanding of how the conditions arose. There was so much wisdom that arose in that moment and freedom that was all kind of experienced together. That happened within 2 months of when I started practice, and it happened just in daily life through this simple practice of being curious about what happens when I get angry. What's going on there? How does it happen? And so that what I now understand, that moment was a little burst of very strong mindfulness. I didn't have control over it. I didn't make it happen. But it can happen with this intention, with this kind of intention to meet what's happening. Maybe a little bit of curiosity about particular experience can support that. In this case, this burst of curiosity came around the intention to look at anger. So there was the mind was kind of attuned. It was getting very attuned to anger and when it was arising, and as Carol Wilson kind of encourages, or points to, that the mindfulness can get to know the smell of something coming. And that's what happened there, that the mindfulness noticed that it was headed to the anger. So this is just a little bit of an encouragement that we don't have to have the idea, the practice, the idea in practice that wisdom is far away. It's really, it's quite close when there is even just a few seconds of continuity. And we don't get to do those few seconds of continuity, but we can cultivate the conditions for those bursts of continuity. I sometimes call them bursts of continuity. We can create the conditions for those to arise, doing all of the things that I've been pointing to, with this, especially in daily life, and just how powerful it is in daily life to be able to see into some of those very strong habits and patterns. It's life-changing. That moment that I describe there, that moment changed my life. Very literally changed my life. So it and it 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 was yeah, it wasn't something I did, but it was available because of the curiosity and the intention. So that's just a little bit of an encouragement. And then the other piece I want to just offer a few things about. We talked a little bit about talking practice. Hang on, let me just check the questions. Well, there's a lot of questions in the chat now. All right, let's see. The curiosity and questions about the attitudes around an experience I find helpful, but it turns on the analytical mind quickly and I end up thinking about my thoughts. Is that being highly aware or simply drifting back in thoughts? It's not so clear, but I'm wondering if there's a way to better compartmentalize a little better. So yeah, I mean it does happen that when we ask ourselves questions or are curious about like asking the question, what's the attitude? We can see the attitude, but then we start thinking about it. And so, if when you notice that thinking about just notice that that's happened and see if you can reconnect with not so much with the content of the thoughts, but more the feeling of what's here. Is it, so that may take a little bit of practice at first to kind of decouple from the follow-on thoughts that happen after we when we notice something, like we start thinking about it. And if you notice you're thinking about something, that's generally, I mean, there can be some awareness in there, and we can cultivate the awareness while we're thinking. But early on, that's a little more challenging. So I would encourage a letting go or a noticing that the mind is thinking and seeing if you can come back to the feeling of what's happening. Can you comment on a practice that includes both more focused awareness, for example, concentration on the breath, and a more open, receptive awareness? Okay, I'm going to take that question in a minute. I'm going to come back to a little bit more about challenging areas to practice in daily life. One of the most challenging being talking. So we talked about this a little bit the other day in terms of some supports for being aware with content. That's the first piece. Is to because talking is got a lot of content to it, and that's a lot of what we get hooked to. We get hooked to the ideas in the conversation and how we feel about them rather than being aware of what is happening with us. And so the kind of practice of being aware with content, which I encouraged with reading and writing, that's a place to begin really practicing with being aware not only of the content, but also of how you are with the content. So that's the place to begin with this exploration. Now, with talking itself, what I found is that it's helpful to start with something really, really, really simple. And it took quite a while, even. You know, I think early on when I was trying to practice, before I had a little more skill with the mindfulness while talking, I was trying to practice the way I had been practicing other things. You know, I'm trying to be aware of everything. I'm trying to be aware of my body and the what I'm going to say, and you know how it might affect the other person. Those things are all possible to know, but to start, you really just have to keep it simple. And at some point, I found that the easiest instruction was just, "Can I know I'm talking while talk? Well, can I know I'm talking while I'm talking? Can I be aware that I'm talking while I'm talking?" Just start there. You know, it's just the simple awareness. Am I aware while talking? Can I know that I'm aware while talking? So that was a place to begin. It's often easier with listening. You can be some easier to be aware with listening. And so that can be a way in also in the conversation. Notice, I mean, we often spend time when somebody else is talking, not really listening, but thinking about what we're going to say next. And so, you know, be with yourself with the content that they are offering. So again, that kind of 50-50 awareness. How does it feel to take in the content that they're offering? So that piece begins to give you a kind of more dynamic exploration of content and awareness of experience. I found that while I was talking, I really needed to gain a little bit of capacity to just know I was talking while I was talking before I could do much else. So, you know, just know that I'm talking while I'm talking. And I did get to that point on a retreat with Sayadaw Utejaniya. We had the opportunity at that retreat to have conversations with people. Sayadaw actually encouraged it. And there were particular times of day that seemed like, you know, people would do a walk and talk. We would be walking in the center of the monastery up and down about a quarter mile, and people in pairs just doing, you know, walking and talking. And there was one particular person that I was talking with, and I was aware that I was aware while I was talking, aware of what was happening with the experience, you know, with that I was aware. But I kept getting frustrated because I would feel like I was done with the conversation. You know, I didn't actually say, "I'm done with the conversation, I need to go now," you know, which I could have done, but I just was trying to wrap it up in a kind of more, oh, you know, socially conventional way, you know, like saying something that I thought would wind up the conversation and the person would understand, "I'm done now." But they didn't understand that, and they kept going. And I kept trying, and you know, so I reported this all to Sayadaw Utejaniya, and he kind of laughed and he said, "You're not noticing agitation in your mind." And so the next time I had that conversation with that person, I had a conversation with them, I was noticing that I was aware, and then I did become aware when the agitation arose. I hadn't really been clear about that. The agitation was informing how I related to them, but it wasn't clearly seen. And so beginning to notice the agitation, then I could navigate it a little bit. I played with it a little bit. It's like, oh, I can be aware of the agitation. And I don't actually need to end the conversation. I can just be curious about this. The agitation kind of dissipated, and then it arose again, and then it dissipated. So I got curious about the agitation. And so this is the next piece, is there's a little bit more continuity of mindfulness, and there can be the knowing that you're talking while you're talking. The next piece that I encourage is recognizing, is there agitation or ease while talking? Just that simple. That is a lot of information, actually, just noticing if there's, you know, if the heart and mind are constricted, or if there's ease. There's a lot of information there that can be useful in a conversation. If there's constriction, there's something, you know, going on. You may not have enough capacity for mindfulness in the conversation to know what it is, whether it's fear or greed or confusion or aversion, but you know there's something going on. And so there can be a little bit maybe of a pause for yourself. So those are two pieces that's where I would begin. See if you can notice you're talking while you're talking, and probably that's going to take some time. And then when you can notice you're talking while you're talking, is there agitation or ease while you're talking? There's a little bit more that you can explore as you get to that place, but I think I'll save some more of that for later, for maybe tomorrow. See, I'll want to hear a little bit from you guys about how this is to explore this. So, yeah.